Welcome to episode 219 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Visit Victoria's Damien DeBowen about my hometown, I affectionately call the sporting capital of the world.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who's looking forward to Melbourne, Australia Comedy Festival, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I am Sean Callanan, and I'd love to see you at an event, whether it be the Comedy Festival, which I will be appearing in next year, or an esports event, which I'm attending later today after recording this for League of Origin, or at a conference where I may be speaking. You can find me and contact me on all channels, whether it's old school email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or via Twitter at Sean Callanan. As I've stated, now in the scene of esports, DMs are open. So if you want to send me a DM, please do so. And yes, very pleased to be invited back to be part of the School of Hard Knock Knocks comedy festival shows. And I've got a gig coming up soon, end of November. So stay tuned for that after the interview with Damien DeBowen from Visit Victoria. Before we get into that, I just wanted to say thank you to all the participants at the AFL Digital to Dollars workshop. Thanks to Tim Mullally and Evan Cole and the guys at AFL and Telstra to help coordinate and set it up. And thank you to all the participants who had been at the Fan Summit and participated fully for the day. And we had some really good discussions around how they can drive more revenue from what they're doing in the digital space. So it was the first time that I'd run the workshop in a league format. It was the one day, and we went through the five pillars: know your audience, know your content, know your distribution, know your value, know your pitch. So it was really, it was really good. Thank you. You'll be seeing all the people who attended in Sports Geek Nation, which I'll talk about later. But if you're interested to roll out the digital to dollars process, either as a workshop for your league or as a process for your team to understand how you can drive more dollars from your digital, please go to digital to dollars.com or email me, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. My guest this week is a longtime friend. I worked with him when he was head of the A-League. He is now the general manager of major events at Visit Victoria. And so we talk about that role and the role that they play in bringing big events, sports, arts and otherwise, to make sure that Victoria is the place to be. And I totally agree, being a Melbourne born and bred and a long time promoter of Melbourne and Victoria. So this is my chat with Damien DeBowen. Very happy to be here in the Docklands precinct, overlooking part of the Melbourne sporting infrastructure, here at the offices of Visit Victoria with the General Manager of Major Events, Damien DeBowen. Welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, Sean, and thanks for having me.
So we've known each other for a few years in various roles. So, you know, this background story I know, but I want to make sure the listeners know. How did you get your start in sports?
I've been really privileged to work in the two sports I grew up loving, cricket and football, as I call it. Some of your listeners may call it soccer, but it is, of course, the world game of football. Going back some time, I was the chief executive of the Football Federation of Victoria and was actually involved in helping set up the A-League when it first started. Went across to Cricket Australia then as one of their executives and then had the privilege of being the head of the A-League for several years after that. So across two sports, incredible experiences and just amazing to work in the two sports I grew up playing and loving.
You're not getting away with it that quickly. We're going to dive a little bit deeper. So in the cricket role, what was the role and the remit in that space from in the Cricket Australia role?
So I was employed by Cricket Australia really to grow participation of boys and girls and then to convert that participation into commercial outcomes. My title was a bit long. I was the executive General Manager of Game and Market Development, which really meant really reinvigorating, re-establishing a lot of their entry-level programs, things like Inter Cricket, T20 Bash, and T20 Blast, and a whole range of other things. One of the really big shifts in my time at cricket was that we were in many ways empowered to shift cricket from being male, pale and stale to becoming a sport that would genuinely embrace all Australians and in a really figurative sense to shift it from being granddad sport to the granddaughter's sport. So a very deliberate shift. I was heavily involved in the female engagement strategy, heavily involved in establishing a whole range of programs for culturally and linguistically diverse people and really making sure that cricket could start to make that transition to ensure it was a sport truly for all Australians.
And so at that time at Cricket Australia, you would have worked with a former guest, Michael Brown at Cricket Australia at that time?
Yeah, Michael and I are still very close. We've had a lot of time together. In fact, a very quick and funny story, my very first day at Cricket Australia, I was very young executive and I walked past his office because my office was two doors down. I think I had my sunglasses on and my ear pods in.
Yep.
And he pulled me aside and explained that was no way for an executive of Cricket Australia to behave. And very quickly we struck up a tremendous rapport. So Michael's someone who's had an outstanding career himself in the business of sport and someone who I still thoroughly enjoy spending time with.
And the other person when I was saying that I was going to interview you today that you would have worked with at Cricket Australia and especially in that grassroots and getting a work was Andrew Walton and helping get the technology to sort of connect that grassroots.
Yeah.
Fan base and player development.
Yeah, the work that Andrew and his team did was a real breakthrough for cricket. We had done a lot of the groundwork in starting to change and revolutionise how we were engaging kids, a lot of work in schools. What we found was that was great, but we weren't really capturing all that data and then able to really commercialise and market to them. So the work that Andrew and his team did really helped us change that and shift that. And look, the system that cricket has in place now, it's been incredible how much growth there's been in participation and having a really strong IT infrastructure to help develop that was a big part of it.
And so how was it going from one summer sport to another, moving across to football, to the A-League as the head of A-League and stepping up in role and looking over the whole league? What was that like as a career move?
It was great. I learnt so much at cricket for that time in my life, and then I learnt so much running the A-League. It was an incredible time for the A-League. Western Sydney came on board. Alessandro Del Piero, Emil Heskey and Shinji Ono came on board at the same time as individual players. And really the thing I'm probably most proud of is that the A-League transitioned from being where it was to becoming genuinely part of the mainstream of Australian sport. It really went from being something that was emerging to something that had really grown and had a lot of focus. It was a fascinating time. There were so many huge highs. There were obviously a whole range of challenges that you face in a role like that. I think the thing, as I reflect, that I was really proud of in that context was the fact that we had the final of the 4 years that I was running the A-League were actually played in different cities and won by four different clubs, teams. So that's one of the key elements of the business of sport is to make sure that the result's unpredictable and that all fans going into a new season truly believe that their team can win. And that obviously happened. We obviously introduced the FFA Cup during my time there as well. And I was also responsible and ran the W League. And it's been great to see women's football really continue to surge and the Matildas continue to grow in profile and popularity. So it was a fabulous time and one I enjoyed thoroughly.
Yeah, it must make you feel so proud, especially like in the W League, to have, you know, an absolute rock star of the game in Sam Kerr coming back as a marquee into the W League, because that's the, you know, that's the whole idea for the league to be there to give that position for our female footballers who are doing terrific things in the world stage.
They are. And the one thing I've come to understand, particularly working with female athletes, to be frank, is that they really seem to understand how important they are as role models. And people like Sam Kerr, Elise Perry, who played football and cricket, obviously. Yep. Lisa Devana is an incredible athlete. A whole range of the ladies involved in the game really got that piece. And when it's all said and done, the responsibility of any player, any elite player, is to leave the sport in a better place than they found it. And I think so many of the Matildas and W League players do, as did the A League players. But for some reason, the ladies involved in the W League seem to really, really grasp that.
Yeah. I will share it in the show notes, the young girl that got Sam Kerr's jersey and the video that went viral. She was just so excited. And then I think it was only last week she actually met Sam in person.
Wow.
And she couldn't stop crying. And Sam was like, this is just means as much to me that I'm a hero for this young girl.
Yes.
You know, this is why I'm doing it. And it, you know, motivates her further. I thought it's really good to see that type of, you know, viral content is great, but actually seeing the connection with young girls is, you know, why you have the elite sport.
Yeah, the phrase we coined in my time in cricket was inspiring the next generation of Australian cricket's players and fans. And I think the point is that, you know, young boys and girls who play the game, play whatever game it is, are more likely to consume the game and be involved. And from that perspective, I think a lot of the sports and certainly the major sports are really coming to understand that and grasp that it is an entire ecosystem. It's not just about the elite end of the game. And making sure that kids coming through have aspiration and can be inspired is a huge part of that.
So now you're in this new role at Visa Victoria. You've moved out of effectively an NGO, national governing body, and a league role to be moving government side as GM of major events. Sport is a big part of that. What is that role when you first stepped into it?
Well, I think, look, the lure of coming to be, you know, to run major events in Melbourne was just too strong. And for those of your listeners who don't know, I mean, Melbourne is truly a global event city. When we talk, and a lot of the work that we do, we're often talking about London, New York and Melbourne.
Yep.
That's the level that Melbourne participates at in terms of major events. And when you go through the calendar, from whether it's the Australian Open tennis tournament or the Formula One Grand Prix or the Melbourne Cup horse racing carnival that stops the nation, or the local code of football called Australian Rules Football Finals, or the Boxing Day Test match in terms of regular events, through to having Brazil versus Argentina play football at the MCG, through to having the USA basketball team coming to play the Australian Boomers at Marvel Stadium next year, just on the sports side. And that's before we talk about the fact that we also cover the arts and theatre and food and wine and fashion. So it's a very diverse portfolio. If you go to things like theatre, we've secured Harry Potter, the theatre coming to Melbourne. And again, it's only in the first instance going to New York, London and Melbourne. It will pick up one or two other cities. But it's fascinating for me to be working across a much broader range of activity and to enjoy that. But when it's all said and done, Melbourne is a global event city. It really is in the DNA of this city. It probably defines in many ways who Melbourne is. People come here to have a fantastic time, to engage with all the events that we have, and then enjoy some of the incredible food that we have, and then maybe go a little bit out of the city to see some of the amazing sights nearby. So it is fabulous work. It's a real privilege. And the lure of coming back to Melbourne, back home, if you like, to run major events in really what is clearly a market leader has been fantastic.
And so from a, you know, as a proud Victorian, and that spiel is a spiel that I do give when I'm overseas, when they say, what is Melbourne like? I, you know, there's all these football games and there's major events. And, yeah, it does get I have had arguments with Rich Clark. He argues that it's London. And I'm like, no, I think we've got you covered. So from a government point of view, is it part engaging the community here and then also the tourism play as far as Visit Victoria is concerned?
So to give you a context of scale, we are involved in a $27 billion industry. So this is not just a nice thing to do on the side in and around Melbourne. Our job is to absolutely make sure that people from both overseas and interstate regularly come to Melbourne and consume all that Melbourne and the region or the state of Victoria has to offer. And obviously to make sure that people who live in and around Melbourne have that opportunity. So I would say for anyone growing up in Melbourne or listening to this in Melbourne, it is without question on a global scale a real privilege. And I get the chance and the opportunity to travel extensively around the world. We presented recently at a conference in Denmark, in Aarhus. And it was fascinating for me to see how the cities that you would think are well advanced and global cities, cities like Paris, like Los Angeles, both of them applying for the Olympic Games, London, New York, Berlin, Munich, you know, they all wanted to spend time with us to understand how on earth we have such an incredibly strong major events program, and equally and very interestingly, why it is that our facilities, both sporting and cultural facilities, are so close and in such close proximity to the centre of the city. And that is unique globally and really sets us apart.
The Olympic Park, Melbourne Olympic Park precinct with the MCG and the tennis being close, and Amy Park being there. You know, again, when I'm talking to people, because I live in Richmond, I say it's a six pub walk, and I'm at any of all of those venues. It's great being in the inner city, but it is unique having both from a events point of view, but then when you talk to people like Baden at the Rebels and Dave Donaghy at the Storm and Collingwood, you've got all these high performance teams that are working in the same operate space. There's so much learning and stuff happening across there.
Well, one of the pieces of research that I did going back to my time running the A-League was to get a sense of looking back then at league expansion and where you would put teams. What emerged is that Melbourne has more teams, not per capita, just more professional sporting franchises than any other city in the world. Now, people don't quite understand that. Of course, the AFL has the group that they have, but then when you start to include rugby union, rugby league, football, cricket, netball, basketball, when you go through the list, the franchise, from memory, it was 27 or 28 professional teams. In a city of 4 or 5 million people.
It's when there's like maybe 10 in New York.
Correct. So it is, there's no doubt it's, we're sport for choice, which also means in the role that we perform that we have to be incredibly discerning in terms of the events or the activities that we bring to Melbourne, because people are so spoiled here that if it's not the best of the best, they sniff it out a mile away. And a great example of that was one of the first contracts or events, if you like, that we brought here in my tenure was Brazil versus Argentina at the Melbourne Cricket Ground. Mm-hmm. And, of course, 97,000 people came. The game was sold out in no time. And that's the level that we're at. That's the level that we expect, and that's the level that our public expects here.
So how do you pick and choose? Because, one, you've got promoters or event organisers saying, well, you've got the infrastructure. You put the cheeks on the seats. You know people will turn up. Melbourne loves their sport, so you become an attractive destination. How do you pick and choose the events that do get let in, or you do bid for, and or you do partner with?
Yeah, it's a great question, Sean. And the real answer is it's no two times the same.
Yeah,
there's no linear process. There's no cookie cutter that you apply and say this fits and that doesn't. And I guess that makes it very interesting. And the real answer is it varies dramatically from one event to the next. Sometimes we are dealing, for example, directly with producers of a major theatre production or directly with a sporting club or a football club. At other times we're working through third parties who may have connections there. And at other times it's a mix of both. Sometimes the leads come from the most obscure sources. Sometimes it's about athletes that might be playing in a particular league or people who are involved in a particular theatre production or even have connections with an art gallery. So it really is, it's never linear.
Yep.
It's very interesting. And, how we decide, we have a really clear focus on securing the best of the best. It's interesting, and one of Michael Brown's favourite quotes, who we spoke about earlier, is self-praise is no praise at all.
Yeah.
So I'll be careful how I say this, but we recently won the award through Sports Business International for the best major event strategy globally, which is significant. So against your friends in London and New York, literally they said, this is the best strategy that we've read globally. And the reason I believe that's the case is because, firstly, we are very discerning about making sure it's the very best content. And if you look at groups like the National Gallery of Victoria here, they've had recent success with Van Gogh and with Dior, some of the things that they've run more recently have been extraordinary. And so what we do is secure that content, but most importantly, we actually connect different pieces of content. So an example of that would be, and we've done a lot of work with the chief executives of all the different events around the city of Melbourne, is that people who come to the Australian Open Tennis in January in Melbourne, if they have an international postcode where they bought the tickets from, they also receive in their pack free guided tour to the National Gallery of Victoria. So what our research has shown us is that people will travel and come to a city like Melbourne for more than one event. In fact, on average, it's 3.6 events.
Yep.
And so we need to make sure that we understand the breadth and depth of what visitors and what consumers want to see and do. And we work hard to make sure that when people are here, they have a range of options available to them.
So where does you're talking about securing the content and sort of being that icebreaker and the introduce it to the market. How much is your work in that front end space of, hey, we're going to secure it, and then how much it is, oh, we're also going to help you activate it and make sure it actually works and and potentially, you know, say the basketball at Marvel Stadium, well, the sport and rec guys, which are a different department, they want to activate it because they want more kids playing and that kind of things. How much is it cross-department? Where do you fit in that space?
Look, I think what the feedback we get from people who we're dealing with in terms of what sets Visit Victoria apart in the space of major events is that we don't just pay lip service to this, we are serious partners with them.
Yep.
So to answer your question, securing the deal, securing the event is really only the first step in the process, and their success is our success. The best example, without sharing too many inside confidences, is it was without question an absolute coup to secure the American basketball team to come here to play two matches against the Australian Boomers on the way to the World Cup in China in August 2019. It's fair to say, you know, our early conversations with them, the NBA, who are one of the best marketing sports businesses in the world.
Yep.
I don't think they were desperately convinced that we would fill a 55,000-seat stadium once, let alone twice.
Yeah.
And we made it abundantly clear that their success was our success. We would not rest until that was done. And I'm pleased to state that we now have over 50,000 tickets sold for both matches. They will both sell out.
Yep.
I was back in New York recently meeting with the NBA, and they were absolutely stunned at the response and how that played out. And so working with them to make sure that the events are a huge success is a massive part of that. We just had 71,000 people come to the Melbourne Cricket Ground to watch World Wrestling, as you may know. So it gives you a sense of the diversity and how we focus on that. I think the other thing that is critical, however, is that not only are we focused on securing the event and making sure the event is a success, but we've made a very significant transition to start to make sure we tell Melbourne's story through the events we secure. So I say quite openly that our predecessors, the Victoria Major Events Company, who did a fabulous job as an events company, did exactly what they were required to and did it well. We have made a transition from being an events company to genuinely becoming a marketing organisation.
Yeah.
And it is a very distinct difference. And what it means is that not only do we secure the events, but we make sure that those events are able to tell Melbourne's story globally. So a couple of really good examples, say the World Wrestling that we had recently at the Melbourne Cricket Ground. We worked with the broadcasters to ensure that key messages about Melbourne were integrated throughout the broadcast, not only on the night but in the weeks leading into the broadcast and then obviously post then. So it really is ultimately about telling Melbourne's story, about demonstrating the breadth and depth of the wonderful events that Melbourne have to offer, and then highlighting this fabulous city as a place that people want to come and visit and come and spend time and just have an incredible time. And the one thing that we know, because our events calendar is so strong, that when people do come here, they do have an incredible time.
Yeah. I think one of the things, and, you know, when I'm talking to people in the US or in the UK, the US are normally the case where they give us the Melbourne. Mm. And I was at the World Golf launch and Matt Kaminsky was there about the President's Cup and the World Cup of Golf. And they had the teaser video, and they had the American voiceover, and he was saying Melbourne correctly.
Yes,
and I said it's those little touches that one help, you know, validate it for everyone internally, but then also, you know, make sure everyone in the world goes, this is how we say Melbourne. And I said kudos to you, because normally, you know, oh, we're over in Melbourne, Australia, you know, so it's always one of those things that's quite funny, but it's part of that message.
It is. And look, golf, I'm glad you raised it, because we do of course have the World Cup of Golf and then the President's Cup next year. They're both US PGA Tour events, and they are the best of the best in the world of golf. What's been interesting working with them, and it comes back to why is Melbourne so successful in the space of major events is that there is an absolute authenticity around the events that we run and the venues that we have. And for those who have not played on Melbourne's Sandbelt golf courses, they are world class. They're every bit as good as anything you'll get in Ireland or Scotland or on the East Coast or the West Coast of the USA or in New Zealand. And they are championship tournament level courses. And so we're actually doing a major piece of work with the USPGA right now and their global broadcasters, NBC, to start to tell the story about Melbourne Sandbelt in a way that's never been told before and to really establish those golf courses as a bucket list destination for golfers globally. So this is where the events become so important because it is, you know, golf tourism, cycling tourism, they're real things now.
Yeah.
You know, people are travelling the world with their golf clubs when they get to a certain point to play on courses that the very best in the world play. And so we've actually got NBC coming out here in the next couple of weeks to do a couple of half-hour specials working with Tourism Australia and ourselves to tell the story about Melbourne Sandbelt golf courses, because when you speak to the players like Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler, as well as obviously Adam Scott and Jason Day and Mark Leishman, and they are some amongst the best golf courses on earth. And so it's that authenticity that really sets Melbourne apart from any other city in the region.
Yeah,
where people who come to experience it, they come to see it, and they come to enjoy it. It takes things to a whole new level.
Yeah, I mean the players are going to talk about the golf courses themselves because they're golfers. They know how good the courses are. Yeah,
correct.
The last one, because we've talked about all these big sports that everyone's familiar with, but caught up with Nick Vanzetti recently to talk about the Melbourne Esports Open. Mm. And it's, you know, it's speculative is not the right term, but it's new frontier and it's a new fan base. Mm. And it's, you know, year one. And so having that commitment of, hey, this is what the Melbourne Esports Open is going to be over the next 5 years.
Yes.
Yeah. So what was it like dipping your toe into that water, into the world of esports?
Well, Sean, it's a lot more than speculative, I can tell you that. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's two parts to this. We did a lot of research on esports to understand exactly where it is in the marketplace.
Yep.
And for any of your listeners that don't think it's a thing, just go to one event because it is remarkable. And I went, obviously, to the Melbourne Esports Open because we worked with groups to bring that into town. And having been to literally hundreds, probably thousands of sporting events at different times around the world, I was blown away by the passion and the vigour and the verve with which people were supporting and cheering and screaming for people, you know, playing esports or being engaged in esports on stage.
Yeah.
And so you know, from our perspective, it's actually about really in a strategic sense understanding what the next generation of event goers are looking for. So Melbourne has an outstanding calendar of events, which are, some are very traditional, some are very new.
Yep.
But we have this you know, this growing and burgeoning group of, you know, 15, 20, 30-year-olds who have a very, very strong sense of wanting to be involved in the event scene. And so, you know, we took a very long-term view from our perspective to say we want to back the Melbourne Esports Open for a period of 5 years, which is what we've done. We were thrilled with the way it started out, and it's only going to get bigger and better. And it does link in again. I talk about how what we're doing is strategic. You know, Melbourne is an absolute hub for designers and gamers and people establishing themselves in that world and in that market. And so we see a very, very clear vision about, you know, Melbourne being an esports hub globally, that there's some real opportunity there. And we have, again, you talk about how all these bits of the jigsaw come together. The Melbourne Olympic Park precinct, which is where the Australian Open tennis is played and people like Pink sell out 17 concerts in a row and that type of thing. There's three or four venues attached to each other. It just lends itself perfectly to that type of event. So when we have that sort of canvas, it gives us an opportunity to do things that very few other destinations can do.
And the thing is, you've got the roadmap there for, you know, the tennis, you know, the Aussie Open. You know, if you wind back and remember 15 years ago, the activations that were happening, it was maybe a little bit at the back and maybe the oval was being done, and now the Aussie Open nearly all goes all the way up to Flinders Street, you know, and it's practically to my back to my house, the fact that it just keeps growing and all the different pieces. Mm. When you look at the Esports Open, you go, oh, okay, we can see where it's going to go. Mm. We can see what the options are, you know, and I think it's something that, you know, and it was good to see both the passion, but also the demographic, the mums and dads with their kids experiencing an event, in this case esports, for the very first time. And so they're like, oh, cool, this is what it is. Oh, I'll be back.
Yeah, it was. It was extraordinary. And I know I might have been sucked into a couple of games of Spider-Man and different things whilst I was there. And I know that all the kids I was around who got to enjoy the day just had an absolute ball. So it really speaks to the fact that we are really focused on understanding the market, on being very strategic about what we engage in, and making sure that the next generation of event goers have a real connection with Melbourne as a city and understand that this is a place where they can come to have an incredible time.
Terrific. I want to finish things off with the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I do. I'm not sure how many bites of the cherry I can have here, but I've got a couple of quick stories, if that's all right, Sean.
Go for it. As long as we've got battery power, you can go.
One's a broadcast story and two are a live story. Yeah. So my father's from Leicester. He will die a happy man after Leicester winning the English Premier League a few years ago because it was an incredible success. But the very first time, I've got two younger brothers, and I'm pretty sure it was 1977. I was very, very young, but it was the first time we were allowed to get up and watch the FA Cup final at night.
Okay, yeah.
And Liverpool were playing Manchester United, and Liverpool lost, I'm pretty sure, 2-1. But he said, I'm not going to make you boys barrack for Leicester, so pick one of these two teams, and that's when I became a lifelong Liverpool fan. So that was a pretty amazing story. Actually, attending the venues, there's two quick stories. I remember vividly being at Olympic Park, I reckon it was early 80s, when Australia played Scotland in a World Cup qualifier. And it was people like Graham Souness and Kenny Dalglish and all the people I guess I've been watching from Liverpool out on the park. And then I did play football quite seriously, and I got to play on Olympic Park a few years after that in what was called the Armstrong Cup Final, a local, I think it was a reserve grade, but a cup final statewide.
Yep.
And just so to get out there and play on the same park that you'd seen your heroes win, that was the first game you remember, was fantastic. But one other story that's I'm sure I would never let my kids do it now. I reckon I was 11. My other brother was 9, Justin and Clinton was 7, and Australia was playing England in an Ashes test, and many of the listeners will remember this, when Alan Border and Jeff Thompson were batting for the last wicket on day 5 and needed 63 runs to win or something like that from memory. Anyway, I noticed on the news the night before there was this big announcement that the gates were being opened. And so I said to Mum and Dad, I said, hey, do you mind if I take Justin and Clinton into town on the train and we're going to go and watch it? And they, much to my disbelief, they said yes.
Yep.
So you've got three kids. I'm pretty sure we're 11, 9 and 7. We went into the MCG. Of course, Alan Border and Jeff Thompson got to within 3 runs or 4 runs, and there was a big edge from Tomo and it was dropped, and then I think it was Ian Botham or someone ran around and caught the rebound. Of course, they lost by 3 runs.
Yep.
But an amazing experience. And Alan Border is someone I got to know very well in my time at Cricket Australia later, because he was on the board of Cricket Australia. So there's a few connections that mean a lot to me. So they would be my earliest sporting memories, if that's helpful, Sean.
They are good sporting memories. Yeah, it is. Yeah, for the people who don't know, in Test cricket, in a 5-day game, when the game has still got a little bit time to go and it's they really can't charge for the 5th day, often it does happen. They say, well, we're just going to let everyone in for free. We think this will be over in 10 minutes if you want to come down. And, yeah, in this case, it might have been an hour or
nearly 2 hours
of free cricket, and it would have been a good place to be. You would have been to a lot of sports events in your time. Do you have a favourite food memory or a go-to food at a sports event?
I have had the privilege of eating a lot of different foods. Look, this might sound crazy, but the place I get to watch some games, duck pancakes are pretty good. And I reckon at the MCG I've had a couple of those that are amazing. But it was very difficult. I was in the US recently and I hadn't been to a baseball game until sort of 2 years ago. And I had a hot dog at the baseball and it was incredible. So,
what stadium?
At the City Stadium for the New York
For the New York Mets.
So it was a great night, and
very much a tradition.
The hot dogs was fantastic. So there's a few. It's probably too many dimensions. Yeah. So duck pancakes and hot dogs. There we go.
That's a good one. What's the first app you open in the morning?
The weather app. I ride most mornings, so I'm. It might sound a bit strange. This is, for some reason, I set my alarm for 5:05. 5 is my favourite number.
Okay.
And I've really become someone who enjoys riding on my own nice and early to sort of think through the day. And I generally just have a bit of a flick to see, is it sunny, is it windy, is it wet? and go from there. So that's it. The weather app is as good as it gets.
Very good, very good. Is there someone that you follow to sort of keep in touch or as a keep abreast of different things, or is there an author? Is there someone that the podcast listeners should follow or read that you do?
There's many. Yep. I think what I've been really fascinated by, especially in this job, as I've come to appreciate sport globally, American sport particularly more, is to get a sense of the influence that different athletes are having on so many levels. And so whilst there's some tremendous authors, it's almost this sense of who's dealing with topical things day in, day out. One person, I guess I'm a little bit patriotic and biased, is that Ben Simmons, who is emerging as one of the really great basketballers of the modern era, obviously at rookie level at the moment.
Yep.
Ben's someone who we've got to know well. He's a Melbourne boy, of course, yep, originally, and we're doing quite a bit of work with him and his management. So he's someone who, is always interesting to have a look at online if you need me to choose a name. But there's so many that it's a bit unfair, but that's one that I'd throw in there.
And he is effectively the young prince learning at the hand of the king with LeBron James. So he's correct, learning from the master.
Yes, there's no question about that.
So lastly, what social media platform is your MVP? And you can answer that as yourself, but then actually maybe put your Visit Vic hat on and what platforms might be working for you there.
Well, you said something interesting before that whilst you can have all the online and all the technical gadgets, yep, under the sun, there is very, very little to replace face-to-face conversation and communication. And so, yep, I'm not saying for a second that I reject social media, but, yep, I am saying that I'm someone who is passionate about the value of being present and being face-to-face like we are now, but this, yep, will go around globally. I mean, from my perspective, I was active on Twitter when I was running the A-League. It's still good to have a bit of a look on that from time to time.
Yep.
And I found it fascinating. One of the great Melbourne events is the Melbourne Cup Horse Racing Carnival.
Yep.
And, of course, they've done so much online and so much with Twitter from their perspective. So if I had to pick one, that's what I would say from my perspective.
Yep.
In the world of Visit Victoria, in addition to major events, it's obviously we're about tourism and being a tourist destination. There's wonderful flora and fauna and so much to see. So I think Insta probably in a business sense is, yep, is proving to be very popular. So if I had to choose one of each, I think they would be what I would go with, sure.
Yeah, I constantly use the Australian Open as an Instagram best case because they have the AO selfie, and they say, hey, you're at the Australian Open, take your AO selfie. And they often have stickers on the ground with footmarks saying, this is a really good spot to take an AO selfie. Mm-hmm. And you actually see people go line up their feet on the sticker to take the selfie. And it's like, it's money for jam from a tourism point of view because they're like, it is the FOMO. And, I think the last two Aussie Opens I've gone to the tennis, I haven't watched any.
Yes.
I've just been in the event of tennis.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, that's Insta, that's hashtags, that's word of mouth, that kind of thing. I do completely agree with you on the face-to-face. I did see it on social media, but I'll explain it. It was a coffee cup that said the best handheld device for connecting with friends, right? To have a coffee with someone and have a chat to people. So
thank you
very much for your time. Where can people find you online if they would like to connect?
Well, I'm not going to hand it my own personal email
address. No, not email address, but you're on Twitter and would that be the primary channel?
Twitter probably. I think I have a LinkedIn profile. I haven't updated for a long time.
Yeah.
But if they really want to see what's going on, Twitter might be the best bet.
Yep. And otherwise, they can check out Visit Victoria and all its channels to find out what you're up to.
Be perfect.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Sean. Great to be here.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following SportsGeek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Damien DeBowen. You can send him a tweet. It's Damien, DamienDeBohun. Thanks to Cody Lynch for setting up the interview. You can always go to sportsgeekhq.com/219. All the links will be there for you to connect with Damien, whether you're doing so on Twitter or you want to check out Visit Victoria. If you go to Visit Victoria, on most platforms, you'll start seeing some of the things that they're sharing there, and what a wonderful state that I live in. And I'll extend that that invitation. If you are a podcast listener and you want to come and visit Victoria, I will extend the invitation to show you around. And as a podcast listener, I will buy you a beer or a beverage of your choice. Before I wrap up today, I just want to talk a little bit about the athlete digital training that we've been doing and some of the programs that we're putting in place a lot of conversations this week around building out and doing a full day workshop, and sometimes the voice doesn't quite get there. The digital training and working with athletes to help them understand how to use digital, how to build their brand, how to stay within the lanes of what they can and can't do, how to protect themselves, but then also how they can be a good digital citizen. So if you are looking for some training for your players as a group, or what we also are doing is developing programs for like a leadership group, a digital leadership group, and helping mentor that group, and they can be the ones that teach the rest of the players. So if you're interested in that, please reach out. You can go to sportsgeekhq.com/social media athlete training to find out more about that. Or as I said, you can always send me an email or a tweet, Sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Lastly, Sports Geek Nation is buzzing. I'm really loving the weekly Ask Me Anything sessions. The members that are contributing, and both from on both sides of the equation, the ones asking the questions, but definitely the guests. We've now just had our 11th guest, if I'm correct, and Conrad from Pronto was talking about the ticketing side at LAFC and doing ticketing via the Apple Watch. And so looking at how technology gets integrated into stadiums and how the fan ticketing experience is changing. If you want to get involved with that, I'd love to see you there. You can go to sportsgeeknation.com to sign up. We will be welcoming everyone who attended the AFL Digital to Dollars workshop. So it'll be good to see some of the folk in there, a good mix of digital execution people and commercial folk, which really benefit from the digital to dollars process. So it'll be good to inject some new blood into the group and get them contributing. But if you're not part of it yet, please go to sportsgeeknation.com to sign up. I did do the tease at the top of the show. I have got a comedy gig coming up. I will be performing at Punchlines Comedy on November 30 in Port Melbourne, here in Melbourne. It is a comedy brand that has been built out by Murray and the team at School of Hard Knock Knocks. I won't be headlining. I am not at that level. But who will be headlining? Absolute rock stars, Jeff Green, who's done multiple comedy festivals and is a long-time all-star performer, travels around the world. I've seen him live a few times myself. So I'm absolutely thrilled to be on the same bill as Jeff Green. And also an up-and-coming comedian in Lee Ton is also headlining. So if you're in Melbourne, November 30, and you want to have a laugh with me, maybe at me, please, there will be links to how you can get tickets in the show notes, sportsgeekhq.com/219. As always, please get in touch. If you've got a question, or anything at all, send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or slide into my DMs and send me a message in there at Sean Callanan. Until the next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callanan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.